Welcome to the Multifamily Zone, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneur life looks like from the family perspective. Now, here are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro.
Hey everyone, this is Julia Barbaro, host of the Multifamily Zone podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host Gino Barbaro.
Can I start up by singing just a little bit? Because this book that I read, this author, it really aligned a lot of the stars for us. And the stuff that we've been doing for the last 20 years plus is just an affirmation of what we've done. It made me feel really good. And really, we should practice, practice humility and all. Yes. But at the same time, I'm like, we're doing some things right, because it's hard.
Doing some things right, but with a lot of trial and error. Yes. And all of these books I've been reading lately, man, I wish I had them years ago, because yes, it was just me figuring out. But at the same time, I'm glad that I struggled.
So can I sing a little bit or no? We'll just skip on that later. Maybe okay. I can weave it in a little bit. Today's guest is co-author of The Relationally Intelligent Child. Dewey Wilson began as a home builder. And in 2003, he and his wife made the decision to enter into vocational ministry with a mission to help strengthen marriages and families within God's church. Since then, Dewey and his wife, Lynn, have continued to help couples restore their marriages as well as contribute to numerous other publications. Welcome to the show, Dr. Dewey Wilson. How you doing?
Yes.
I'm wonderful. I'm glad to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
So let it rip.
We are too. Reading your book, it's like I said to just a few minutes ago, it's so eye-opening, but it's so, in a sense, basic, right? It's mm-hmm. It's the way that I always wanted to have a marriage. When I was younger, we grew up single mom in the house. And for some reason, I always wanted a marriage. I always wanted a family. I always wanted to stay home. Where I got that, I have no idea, because I didn't experience it, but I so desperately wanted it. But it was against what everyone was trying to teach me, which is strange. And they would give me a hard time about it. I remember I was in hairdressing school and somebody asked me, and I said, you know, I really just want to be a stay-at-home mom. And they're like, but what if? And then they gave me the whole list down. And I said, but that just seems so right, so natural and beautiful. And so this book was really refreshing to me.
Well, and to your point, it's, you know, God, we're all created for relationships. Yeah. And I haven't met a young girl yet that didn't want to have that marriage, and whether they were raised by a single parent as mm-hmm. you were or not. But you know, we're all created with this innate desire to be accepted and to want to interact with other people in genuine relationships. And so Dr. Trent and I, when we were putting this book together, we thought, okay, what if there were five principles that we could put together that would actually be fundamental? And we can get into that conversation here just a little bit, but it that would just make sense, you know. I mean, we're very practical thinkers, and this just what we ended up with. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Wilson, I can say that I hit the jackpot by marrying my wife, but I think I could say she hit the jackpot because she was allowed to stay home. But at the same time, I was pretty lucky. Hold on,
sometimes you make weird words aloud. It's a little bit strange.
Well, no, what I want to say is, I
know what you mean, but I think the listeners.
I was lucky that she wanted, and yes, I was looking for that in a spouse. I wanted my wife to stay home. I wanted her to raise the family. We tried in the beginning for her to work, and she would come in the restaurant on the weekends and come and leave the kids with grandma. But what I would say to everybody, figure out what your personal legend is, what you want to accomplish in your life. I think that's important. Yeah. Don't get pushed on. Don't be pressured by society, because ultimately, if your values don't align with what you want to become in 20 years from now, you're going to look back and go, I've got a great job. I've got a great career. But now's the point. I challenge everybody listening right now. What is your personal legend? What do you want to do with your life? We all have that decision. Don't be a victim. We can all write our story in our life. And that's why when I read the book, it made me feel good, because we sort of did without even knowing about it. So that was the powerful thing that I took from the book. Can you define what relational intelligence is for everybody?
Sure. Yeah. And you know, with a earned PhD, in fact, I graduated with a PhD in 2019. So at the age of 61.
Love that.
And it was my buddy and co-author, John Trent, who encouraged me to go back to school. Mm-hmm. I went back to school at the age of 51. I didn't even have a bachelor's degree. And so mm-hmm. I got my bachelor's degree, and then I went and got my master's in marriage and family counseling, and then have an earned PhD in psychology, understanding how the brain processes information, which is just sounds, you know, pretty overrated.
Can you unpack unpack that a little bit, though. I'm sorry to cut you off, Dr. Wilson, but unpack that a little bit, because at 51 years of age, you know, you can't just go back because Dr. Trent said, hey, I think you got to go back. That's a major, massive life decision. And you just said is, oh, yeah, I'm just most people can't make that decision when they're 21. You have children. You have a home building business. You have so many things going on. What was the impetus? Why did you want to go back to school? Why did you want to get that PhD?
Well, Gino, I think it comes back to what you were saying a while ago, is that, you know, we all want to make a difference and we all have a purpose in life. And I always thought mine, I 26 years of construction and home building business, I always thought that was going to be my career for the rest of my life. But at the end of the day, that wasn't it. I found out that, and there's a whole long story in there about, you know, not going to college. I grew up in a very dysfunctional home, and we didn't have the money to send me to school. So I mean, what 18-year-old that's ready to go attack the world that doesn't want to go to college and they're told they don't have to go to college? That's great news.
Yes.
But, you know, in order to be able to fulfill the purpose that I wanted to, the impact I wanted to make in life, John Trent, Dr. Trent, the co-author of this book, he had recognized, he said, Dewey, you've got credibility and you've got confidence, but the one thing you lack in this particular arena is credentials. And so, you know, with that in mind, he said, you need to go back to school. And I took him off my Christmas card list immediately and just put him back on a couple of years ago, which, by the way. And, but, you know, yeah, it's, and quite frankly, you know, as an entrepreneur my whole life, you know, I always felt like that, you know, I could do just pretty much anything I set my mind to. I was raised that way by my father, you know, and he used to tell me, he said, you know, Dewey, failure is only failure when you stop attempting doing what it is that you set out to do. Everything else is just a mid-course correction. Mm-hmm. And that is so true for me. I thought, well, okay, well, let's just give it a whirl. If it's meant to be, then, you know, we'll just stick with it. But, you know, here again, to your point, we all have a purpose in life. And just because our past is a certain way, our past is not always indicative of our future. Mm-hmm. And you can say it the other way. Our future is not indicative of our past. It's, you know, we can make changes in regardless of what our circumstance, our situation is. Just like what you did in your family, you made the decision that we're going to homeschool our children. We're going to build in love in our home. They're going to be raised with an understanding of who they are individually. And with that in mind, you've got six children, probably with all six different types of personalities, some mirror, aspects of each of you.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you are a system that is made up their mind that, you know what, we're not going to listen to the self-talk. We're not going to listen to the advice, the bad advice of people who are most of the time, you know, they're giving you advice based on their perspective of their past and their current experiences. And most of them aren't good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, my dad used to always, he's often say, you know, opinions are often like armpits. Everybody has two and they both stink. and so, you know, it's, you just have to determine, okay, what are the values that I'm going to establish or we are going to establish for our home, and then get educated in them and live them out because you can.
That you just made a really great point is, what are your values at home? What, you know, that's something that the spouses really need to have that discussion, because a lot of times we think we know, we don't have the conversation and we just live our life and we don't live them. We don't truly bring them home, and the kids don't experience them. And the kids get older and like, man, I should have done that years ago. And we have a lot of regrets.
Mm-hmm. I'm going back to the armpit thing. I'm sorry. Yeah. I have another one for opinions.
He wrote
it's a
that
different
one down.
Body part.
He liked that.
I missed that. Opinions are like armpits. They usually stink and people have two of them. Is that what it was?
Yeah. Yeah. Opinions are like armpits.
He loves that.
Everybody's got two of them and most of the time they stink.
Okay. All right. Okay. I heard that correctly, because the other one, I can't use it because it's just not, it's not a family friendly one, but this one's a better one. And it's absolutely true.
And I
had shared with you, people see the world as they are, not as it is. So if you're coming from a dysfunctional family, that's what you're seeing as. But it doesn't have to be that way. That's the thing. You can choose your role models.
Yeah.
You can choose your family role models. You can choose your financial role models. You can choose faith role, whatever role model you want to choose. And we have those decisions. And I love when my wife says, not making a decision is deciding. So if you don't decide on something, that's still a decision. But I need to get back to relational intelligence. I don't know if we really define that. If you can.
Yeah. So where I was going with it is that, you know, in fact, I was just saying this because I have an earned PhD. I sometimes I think that that IQ is overrated. You know, we put so much emphasis in our children's ability to score highly on their in their IQ world. But I'm here to tell you guys that after watching these kids get isolated through COVID and, you know, the stay at home shelter in place, and I'm just getting back into it. One thing that they're really determining is that, you know, anxiety disorder and depression disorder is just going through the roof right now. And one reason why is because they lack relational intelligence. And so relational intelligence isn't a capacity based tool or a concept. It's an application or the ability to apply relationship skills that that can be learned in and out of the home. Both it takes both. So it's not a capacity understanding. It is an application or the ability to exercise what we've already been given to learn, and now we're going to go apply it in our life.
Do you mind? I have a couple more questions before you get into the five elements. If I ask a couple more questions, the next one is, how is health linked to relational intelligence?
Well, I tell you what, let's just start in the area of stress. I mean, who isn't stressed out these days? And, you know, stress, when the body is under severe stress, what happens is there's a chemical called cortisol that gets secreted by the brain, and through it, and it works through the adrenal gland, and the same thing with adrenaline. It usually gets produced first, but then cortisol, which is that fight or flight, that's the one that gets you to dig in and to cope with whatever the environment or the situation is. But there's one key element about that, guys, is that cortisol, your body needs time to offload it. And if you can't offload it, then it's just going to stack on top of each other. And stress is just the number one contributor to cortisol. And so, you know, the truth of the matter in the family is that your children are always going to take their stress cues from their parents. In other words, if the parents stressed out, then the kids are going to be stressed out. And so when you think about it from a physiological perspective or a health perspective, you know, if you're healthy, if you have a healthy perspective and you have a healthy mindset, then your children are going to have a healthy mindset. They are just, they are walking mirrors of what they see at home. And so I would say you have to start right there and looking at stress. And that's what a lot of people say. Well, as a single mom or a single caregiver, you know, I'm fatigued. I'm over fatigued and I'm under rested and I'm just, there's just no time. And so, you know, what in the world am I supposed to do? And, you know, one thing we tell parents is that just try to wake up in the morning with an attitude that today, you know what, I'm going to look at my child and I'm going to look at them with glad eyes. I'm going to tell them how special they are. Yeah, I mean, and that's the story that Dr. Trent put in the book. You know, when him and his brothers had done something really stupid, and he came home and he was afraid that after listening to his mom, he says, "What I hear you say is you don't love me anymore." And you know, she says, "I will always love you." Parents always love their children, and just because sometimes they're just off the rails, it doesn't mean that we have to constantly tell them how they're off the rails. Sometimes just a hug and that's all part of the first element, quite frankly.
That's unconditional love. That's basically saying, I love you. I didn't love what you did. And as far as cortisol, this woman here is responsible for a lot of my cortisol over the last 27 years. So I know a little bit about cortisol.
Hey, you and me both.
I'm just kidding, baby. I know. what was the key to happiness in both of your childhoods? When you look back at your memories, what was that key for you?
Well, I mean, in John's family, it's a lot different than mine. I mean, we used to say we put the dysfunction in my family. I mean, we put the fun in dysfunction in my family. And I mean, we were off the rails. I grew up with an older brother, and you know, everybody needs an older brother. I think
he's an older brother over here. So
probably
I
understand hated myself. Where you're so.
Yeah, but you know, I was blessed to be able to be raised in a home that did have strong ethics and strong values, and they set healthy boundaries. And while I didn't like a lot of them growing up, you know, you talk about happiness. Happiness is obviously, it's a state. It can change by the minute, and it's oftentimes it is determined by emotions instead of beliefs driving our emotions. So oftentimes we let our emotions dictate reality, but if the truth of the matter, it's the other way around. It's your beliefs drive your thoughts drive your actions, and your actions dictate your emotions. Mm-hmm. And so happiness is, is it being able to do anything that I wanted to do? No, it was knowing that when I pillowed my head at night, that my mom and dad loved me.
Yeah.
That regardless of what I did, and even into John's point in the message about what his mother said to him, I was blessed enough to be able to, my dad died with cancer in 1999, and his last words to me were, "I love you."
Yeah.
And that's just, that is our life in a nutshell, I love my parents love me.
Yeah. Wow. Beautiful.
I say to my children when I'm with them and I'll go for a walk or I'll spend any time, I'll say to them, it's the best part of my day. Just use it, everybody. I say it's the best part of my day. And then they'll know. I may not have seen them for most of the day, but when I'm with them for those few minutes and we're either doing the rosary at nighttime, or we're going to sleep, or we're going for a walk, whatever that may be, I just sneak over and say, it's the best part of my day.
And then there's a competition because if someone else heard that.
Yeah, but they don't hear that. I'm sure to, and they all think that I love them the most, which is true. And they all feel special. It's very hard to do that with four or five or six of them.
That's hard for children, is to understand that the parents can love them all. You know, whether you have one, I did hear parents when I only had one, a lot of people are, how could I have another one? How can I share that love? Oh my gosh, you can, because it doesn't matter how many children you have, you can love them all. And it's different, but the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? They're all created. They're all created with their own special little personalities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's here again, that is a point that we, even in the book, we have a pathway for parents to be able to learn relational intelligence on their own, but also be able to impart it to their kids. And one of those tools is a personality assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's free. You go online and you can to the relationallyintelligentchild.com. And you can even if your child is 4 or 5 years old, you can answer the questions for them.
Sure.
Or you can, as they get older, from six or seven to 12, they can, you can look over their shoulders. Mm-hmm. And then from 13 and above, they can take it on their own.
Nice. I want everyone to write these down. These are the five elements. Number one, everybody, secure attachment. Number two, fearless exploration. Number three, unwavering resilience. Number four, wise decision making. And number five, future focused serving of others. That fifth one is so important. Mm-hmm. That's an awesome one. Do you mind if we run through all five of these real quick and give people an idea of what they are?
Be happy to.
Okay, secure attachment, number one, everybody.
Okay, one thing that is important to understand, and we say this in the book multiple times, is I was a home builder for many years, and I built big homes. I mean, these were multi-million dollar houses. But how many times have you walked into a new home, if you've been maybe a parade of homes or something, you walk in there and you see all the incredible trim work and the paint. It's just unbelievable. But how many times have you walked into that house and you looked at each other and go, this is the most incredible, strongest foundation we've ever stood on? Yeah. We just don't do it. But the truth of the matter is that's the most important, the aspect of that home, because the foundation's not right, everything else not going to be right either.
So Dr. Wilson, can I add to that? I totally agree with you. What you're talking about is the character ethic versus the personality ethic. It's really a person of character. You don't see a person's character. You only see their personality at times. So you're saying to build that foundation, to build that character is truly important. And that's the thing we should work on. And that's what you're leaning on. But most of us in today's society, we're looking at the personality, seeing the outside, seeing the aesthetics, seeing that beautiful $600 ceiling fan, seeing that. But meanwhile, you're not looking what that house is truly made of, the bones.
That's right. Yeah. That's one reason why social media can be so detrimental to relational intelligence, because our value, self-value, is determined by how many likes we get, but it's so true. The foundation is, and that's what secure attachment is. Secure attachment, if we can get that right, then chances are what becomes behind it, and every single element is actually built on the element that precedes it. And so as a strong, strong foundation of secure attachment is basically based on the attachment theory, which was mainly established by a man named John Bowlby many decades ago. But the premise of it is that as a child, even as infants, when they have a need, or they're hungry, they don't feel good or whatever it is, if they reach out to a caregiver, and that caregiver consistently reaches back, That's the beginning of a secure attachment. Mm-hmm. And we carry that with us all the way through life. And, you know, there was a study done in West Virginia, I believe it was the University of Virginia, in Virginia. And what it was is called the high heel experiment. And what they did is they took individuals, there's supposedly a heel that's right there on campus. And what they did is they took an individual and they placed a 65 pound backpack on their back. And they said, okay, now, you know, if you were to climb this hill, one, can you tell us how tall it is and how long would it take you to climb it? And then what they would do is that they would bring other people in, they would put that backpack on them, and they would say, okay, they asked them the very same questions, but they also say, but you're not going to have to do it alone. You're going to be able to get to do it with this guy right here, and he's going to be with you the whole way. Well, did you know that just from that perspective, for those that had somebody with them, that the hill was smaller? Mm-hmm. Their perspective of the hill was smaller, and it was going to take less time to climb it. Mm-hmm. And so it really just comes down to that number one, that's what we're created for. We're created for a secure attachment with every single one of our children, especially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you said it a while ago, you individualize each one of them, but you never do that apart from seeing them as a whole. Mm-hmm. And you know your children, and so therefore you're able to have that secure attachment with each and every one of them because they respond differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the security at home, many of us do, but a lot of us don't realize the devastation if it's shattered, I guess. I could, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? With there's a divorce, when I was younger, my husband and I, it was uncommon. You know, mm-hmm. I remember being in school, maybe me and one other child there were the only parents that were divorced. And now, unfortunately, it is the normal. Mm-hmm. And yes. There was a conversation with my kids just recently where we just, for some reason, it was talked about a lot. We met a lot of people that were divorced, remarried, kids, you know, and they actually, my youngest said, does that mean that is dad going to be leaving soon? Like, it was a strange conversation that the other kids never had. The older right. kids. And it really, I mean, it made me really sad.
And to that point, one thing that's important for us parents to recognize is that in itself causes our children stress. Mm-hmm. It causes them to become anxious because it is so prevalent in their culture, whether they, you know, we're like you, we homeschooled both of our girls, mm-hmm. But they interacted with a whole lot of people. We went to a very, yes. very large church. They were raised in a very large church. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what goes to school goes to church. Oh. And I can guarantee you that even there, mm-hmm. They would have conversations with kids that, I mean, were so incredibly different than they were.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they didn't get cues at home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it was very confusing to them. And so setting them down and having that conversation is just so important.
Yeah. And, you know, and also real quick, it's that example of us being married at home that mm-hmm. they're following and they're going to want when they're older, hopefully. Well, you know, our 10-year-old talks about she wants 8 or 10 kids. I don't know. She changes it all the time, but she's looking for the same thing when she's older. And I think that's beautiful.
Well, yeah. I mean, here again, what you guys are doing is you're giving them that secure attachment is so foundational.
Sure.
And, you know, both of our girls, man, I tell you what, we thought that somebody else had inhabited their body when they went off to college because they were like, you know, they've started making decisions and we were like, who is this child? But I'm here to tell you that, you know, that chicken comes back to roost because they come back to home. And that's why it's so important for them to have that secure attachment. Sure. Because what it does, guys, is it builds a safe base for them at home. Mm-hmm. And I mean, isn't that where we'd rather have our children have a safe base?
Yeah.
Is right here at home.
Absolutely.
Because then they're going to be guaranteed to come back.
Absolutely. Do you think it's ever too late?
No, it's not. Because that's another one of the questions we get. Mm-hmm. Okay, you just don't understand my children. You know, they're already old. They're set in their ways. And, you know, just from a way of encouragement, something that's really, really, it's kind of a buzzword, but it's because it's true. One is, it's called neuroplasticity. And it is the brain's ability to reshape and reform itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very, very malleable anyway. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, we thought, I mean, most clinicians and scientists thought decades ago, not too many, I mean, as many as 3 decades ago that, you know, we are only born with so many neurons. And then once those neurons are die, those neural cell assemblies die, then you either use it or lose it. And that's not true. What they're finding out, and research is proving it to be true, is that because of neuroplasticity, these neural cell assemblies can not only be reattached to other neural cell assemblies, they can grow in the process. Mm-hmm. And just so from a physiological perspective, that these parents need to have hope and realize that, you know, if I model something and really believe it to be true, and live it out from the perspective is that, you know what, we can change. We can reverse the curse, if you will. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're going to do it together. But commitment has got to be such a big part of it. Yeah. And, you know, it's been said that life is a life is a continuum. Have you ever heard that before? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a continuum is just a continual sequence of made up of many, many parts. Mm-hmm. Where if the parts are adjacent to each other, then their chances are they're not very much different than the other one. Mm-hmm. And what it basically means is that we can change over time with little bitty ways. It's the little bitty things that we have to do. We think we got to do something really big in order to get big results. Well, that's not necessarily true. You know, the continuum has got the complete polarization from one end to the other. And we get to one end or the other by making small decisions over time.
It's important that you said that we can change, because last week my wife leaves me alone at home with the kids. She goes, I don't know where you went. You just left me alone. And it's like 10 o'clock. And she goes, go watch the kids. And I walk in there, I'm trying to do work, and they're fighting and arguing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, here we go. I scream at her. Ah! And then like 10 minutes later, I'm like, two of them are crying. And I'm like, why did I do that? And I just went and I apologized to them. And I said, I'm really sorry. 10 years ago, we never would have done that. I'm right. Yeah. You're the dad. So you can change. And neuroplasticity is really important for people to understand. You can teach an old dog new tricks. Mm-hmm. And even an old dog over here, she was never on a podcast. She never did speaking. So she's learned a lot. We can if we want to. We need to. We need to continue to grow, continue to contribute. We can do that. If I can say to my kids, I'm really sorry. You know what? They were probably wrong, but the way I reacted to them was not the right way. And as adults, if we show our kids that we're vulnerable and that we make mistakes, then it gives them the ability that they can make mistakes and they can come and say sorry to me when they do something wrong. It's always a continual work in progress.
What it is, it's a part of that. That's what building that secure attachment is all about, Gino. And, and you know, the next element, if you don't mind me just jumping ahead, because it is the output of that secure attachment, and that's the fearless exploration. You know, science shows that you know, children are more apt to explore their world if they do have that safe base.
Yeah.
You know, if they do know that they're not in this alone. You know, it also shows that when children don't have the guidelines, then the risk that they take can have more severe consequences than those that do have that safe base. You know, fearless exploration. I mean, how many times did you see your children when they couldn't even walk, but they were crawling around the room and they find something that was unique to them. They were able to put it in their hand. Where did it go next?
In their mouth.
It went in their mouth. Yeah. Well, it wasn't that they were hungry. It's because they were exploring whatever it was that they saw.
Yeah.
And did you know that they do the same thing all the way up to even another good example is when they get their driver's license.
Yes.
You know, at 16 or 15 years old, if they have been taught how to explore their world with a safe base, then even that in itself is going to determine and dictate how they explore their world as a teenager when they get their driver's license. Mm,
I love that.
And so it's not just then, it's when they go off to college. It's it's when they themselves find their spouse.
Yes.
It just impacts their whole world. And so even as an adult, you know, you've heard it. I don't know if you've ever heard this. I think it's a TED talk. I think it was a guy named Tom Griffin. And he talks about explore or exploit. And, you know, we can get so comfortable with our environment that that's even from a negative perspective as well. We can give up in our mind and then we take more advantage of exploiting our decisions. Mm-hmm. We do the same thing over and over again, oftentimes expecting different results, but we just do the same thing over and over again. And then the flip side of that is explore. It's, you know, children are naturally going to explore their world. And one reason why sometimes they get into trouble, and here again, this is another physiological thing, that the part of the brain that actually assesses risk grows at a faster, in other words, it matures quicker mm-hmm. than the aspect of the brain that calculates consequences. Mm-hmm. And so most of that's take place in the prefrontal cortex, but mm-hmm. That's why, I mean, science shows that sometimes it's even 25 or 30 years before the aspect of the brain that determines consequences is fully developed. That's and so, you know, it's maybe I just gave kids good ammunition to tell their parents, well, my brain hasn't quite developed. Yeah, that's what I'm taking. But in you know, sometimes we just go, what were you thinking? Well,
yes,
they weren't.
Yes.
They were just thinking and living in the moment, as Gino said earlier, and without thinking about the consequences. And so that's why we as parents, one, have got to recognize that even from a physiological perspective, this is who our child is. Mm-hmm. And because they are like this, we have to enter into their world and teach them. Basically, it's our responsibility as parents. Mm-hmm. We can't leave it up to social media and school. Yes. To teach our kids. That's our responsibility.
You know, and another thing, when you're talking about this, I'm picturing the reaction of if our kids do something, or even Gino, if he does something, my reaction to it is going to show whether he's going to tell me later. Because a lot of kids won't go to their parents to tell them because of the reaction they're going to already know they're going to get by. They've learned either go or don't go, maybe go to mom or don't go to mom. And that's something. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, that's so true. You know, most of our kids have been told things in certain ways that we didn't, oftentimes as parents, we don't even realize that's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. But because we're fearful oftentimes because our kids, we don't want them to make the same mistake over and over again. But yet oftentimes it's our response to their bad decision that causes them to already have made up their mind. Okay, well, if this is what's going to happen, then we're going to weigh the consequences based on what I really want to do. And sometimes I'm just going to do it anyway.
Sure.
But the truth of the matter is we think we're making it better as parents, but because we say the same thing in the same way, using the same voice and the same countenance, they've already made up their mind that, you know, this is Charlie Brown's teacher. All they're hearing is wah, 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 wah.
And sometimes, too, when Veronica, or she's 13, she was probably around 3, so 10 years ago, she was a loud screamer. She was a loud one. And there was a moment where she was crying and screaming about something. And I just had it. I lost it at that point. And after that, I said, you know, Veronica, I just want you to know. And she was little. I said, no matter what, even if you're screaming, I always love you. I will always love you. Mm-hmm. And a couple of days later, she did it again. And I said, Veronica, I thought we talked about this. And she's like, but mom, you told me you loved it when I screamed. And I said, okay. And so when we communicate to our children, a lot of times they take it wrong. They don't understand what we're getting at. Mm-hmm. And there is just a very innocent misunderstanding that I think we have to make sure that they understand before we leave the conversation.
Well, isn't that a basic aspect of communication? Because oftentimes we get confused as whose responsibility it is that what we're saying is delivered with the intent that we have. Mm-hmm. We oftentimes think, well, you should know that, or you heard what I said.
Yeah.
Well, they may have listen to what you said, but they didn't hear it.
Exactly.
There's two different aspects.
That's a podcast in and of itself right there. Wow. That's really, there's a lot of depth to that. You have the third one, unwavering resilience. Let's get these last three in, because I could talk to you for hours on this stuff, because it's a great topic. And we can weave so many stories into this. And obviously I want everyone to go out and buy the book, The Relationally Intelligent Child. But number three, unwavering resilience. What is that?
Well, how many times have you been listening or hearing something about children's today, especially, you know, I think millennials have gotten such a bad, they've gotten such a bad rap in so many ways. My dissertation in for my PhD was on millennial narcissism and how it impacts their ability to commit to long-term relationships. And, you know, we live in a culture that I think the majority of people just accept the notion that that millennials are narcissistic. My research didn't show that. Mm-hmm. And I researched people from all over the United States, not just some, kids out of a psychology department at a university. And what I found was, is these kids are highly entitled and have high expectations, but you know, the one thing that they're missing, resilience, they're missing grit. And, because they weren't allowed, so oftentimes you've heard of helicopter parents.
Yes.
You know, well, now we have snowplow parents that, yes, that we don't want our kids to experience anything negative in life because it's going to, they're going to be marked, you know, they're going to, it's going to change their destiny because they don't get that participation trophy in soccer. And that's not true. You know, it's when you get, when you allow a child to fearlessly explore their world through the lens of a secure attachment, then what happens is that they're going to fall. They're going to take chances, mm-hmm, and they're going to fall. And here again, it's not failure. It's failure just, you know, only when you quit. Everything else is a mid-course correction when you're able to get back up and move forward. And, you know, our children knew what their limits were. Mm-hmm. We knew that one, our youngest daughter, I mean, she's a thrill seeker. She likes to get out there and attack her world. The oldest daughter is more of a, she's more reserved, mm-hmm, and she's going to explore differently. And when she falls, man, she takes it hard.
Yeah.
And sometimes she even looked at it like, man, I'm failing. Say, no, you're not failing. You're just establishing a list in your, a mental list of what you shouldn't do next time. In order to get the consequences you've right now, but what to do to succeed. And, you know, I can just guarantee you guys, when you put the secure attachment as a foundation and you allow them to explore their world, then man, when they fall, I mean, how many times did your children, when they were exploring their world, even as a toddler, when they, mm-hmm, failed, the first thing they did is they turned around to look and see where mom and dad were.
Yes. Oh, that is so true.
And, mm-hmm, so that's that, you know what, hey, I'm okay.
Yeah.
My dad used to say, you know, boy, that's too far from the, you know, I've had worse than that on the tip of my tongue and still could whistle a good song. and you know, what he's just basically saying is it's too far from your heart to kill you. Get up and dust your pants, mm-hmm, off and get after it. Go again.
Love that.
Mm-hmm. The last two, wise decision making. I know you've got some great decision making process. You're going to have to read the book for that. But let's talk about wise decision making and future focused serving of others.
Well, wise decision making is, you know, oftentimes we say some of the wisest decision is learning what not to do based on the bad decisions that you've already made. Mm-hmm. And that's one way it is. And here again, if you allow them to be resilient, then they are going to learn that way. In the book, I tell a story about, you know, I told I was going to be a part of a caper growing up with my brother and my cousin of stealing some concrete yard art out of a neighbor's yard. And I was riding a mini bike and my brother was riding a motorcycle. So the little mini bike wasn't going to go near as fast, but they got the yard art and then they zoomed right past me. And all I could envision myself is there's no way in the world I'm going to be the one that gets caught. I'm going to get thrown in prison at the age of 8. And so I tried to get more speed out of my mini bike, and I did it by grabbing my throttle on the right side of my handlebar with both hands. And when I did it, I pulled the handlebar back and I went over the top. And, you know, I learned real quick after as I was rolling across the pavement, that wasn't a good decision. But, you know, we have to let our children. And this is one thing I really pray that your listeners would listen to. You know, as we think our children don't have the ability to make the right decision. But I haven't met a kid yet that wants to cause themselves harm, right, and damage at an early age.
Yeah.
Most of the time, if given the environment, given the perspective, with that secure attachment and you know the understanding to explore, you know what, they're going to make the right decision. Sometimes we just have to take the bubble wrap off and let them go out in the world and experience some things on their own. And you know what. Here's one thing that's just kind of ironic. We want our children to grow up and learn how to have a healthy self-regulation or a self-control of their world. But we refuse to let control of them in order to allow them to learn that.
Yeah.
And as long as we're unwilling to relinquish the control in our own mind, then why should we expect them to learn to make all wise decisions?
That's right.
It just doesn't work that way.
That's right. Yeah, that control as a mom, as a parent is really challenging to let, mm-hmm, go of little by little, but we have to, yeah, just like you said, and it's hard to watch our kids fall, mm-hmm, and get hurt and make mistakes. Yep. But if instead of saying, wow, that's so hard for them, let me help them. Wow, that's so hard for them. I hope they learn something from this, or I hope we can talk about it. And it's a mindset. Yeah. We have to allow it to happen because they're not, mm-hmm, going to learn. And then we complain that, you know, the millennial kids are entitled and all this stuff, but it's our fault. It's our fault.
Oh yeah, it happened on our watch.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say, well, they're third generation removed from a secure attachment yep. home because they don't have both caregivers. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
That's true mm-hmm. in many, many cases. But at the end of the day, there's so many of these little things that we're talking about right now that we can take the time to mm-hmm. learn
yes.
and to get educated. Mm-hmm. You know, it oftentimes we don't want responsibility yes. because we don't and because we don't want responsibility, we don't seek to learn anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the truth of the matter is that with knowledge comes responsibility.
That's right.
And if we're learning the right thing, mm-hmm. then we can learn to be responsible for That's doing right. the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Love that, Jewel. This is a part of the show where I bring in a little business here. Okay. I have avoided business this whole time. We've been talking about kids yeah. and marriage and relationships. Okay. I just couldn't avoid it. I had to itch that. I had to scratch that itch. I had to go for it. The fifth one is the future focused serving of others. As an entrepreneur, you need to focus on needs. Mm-hmm. Just because I love to create a product doesn't mean I'm serving a need. That's mm-hmm. what an entrepreneur needs to do. We need to serve a need. That's why Dr. Wilson wrote this book. There's a need out in the marketplace. He wrote the book. That's why he went back to college and did that. There's a need in the workforce. And I think if you can future focus serving others, I think if you can start that at an early age and adopt that as a mindset, and then you want to become an entrepreneur, it's going to be a lot easier for you to become successful because it's not about you. It's about helping that person and creating that, solving that need and helping that person out. So mm-hmm. I just need to throw that
That's
in
fine.
For you, Jill.
Okay. But I want to hear Dr. Yes. Wilson's okay. view on the
Well, yeah, Gino, there's a lot of truth to what you're saying is that the millennials and especially the Gen Zers, if there's ever been two generations that want to impact their world mm-hmm. the most, it's these guys. Mm-hmm. And but oftentimes they want to do it through the lens of, you know, getting those accolades on social media and how can I make the biggest splash in the short amount of time. And that's not what we're talking about. I mean, what we're talking about is really identifying a very heartfelt need, mm-hmm. one that's real. And, you know, the one of those that's always been real is that other people they're not quite as fortunate as many of us are. Mm-hmm. There's other people that struggle in the world. There's other people that if only given just an opportunity to have somebody by their side, they too could go out and make a difference in the world. But one of the reasons why is oftentimes it's so easy for millennials to get tagged as narcissistic is because one of the characteristics of narcissism is the lack of empathy. And we can be so self-centered and so self-focused. And guys, here again, frankly, we've allowed our kids to think that way because we have basically told them, you know what, you're great.
Yes.
You are incredible and you can do anything you want to mm-hmm. do. Well, they may be great at times, but they're not great all the time.
Right.
And they, just because they're gifted doesn't mean they can do anything they want to do.
That's right.
They all have limitations.
That's right.
But when you allow a child to understand who they are, help them grow in their bent at a very young age. That's one thing I love my wife. She is such a great parent and she didn't have great role models, mm-hmm. but man, that woman, I tell you what, she read books and she learned, she listened to people that she believed were doing it right. And you know, there's, Gino, sometimes I'm like you, I'm like, well, okay, this makes no sense, but you know, mm-hmm. that most really, really smart men are riding in the wake of their wife in many, in many ways. And that was the way it was with Lynn. And, you know, she said, we really believe that we wanted to homeschool our children. And I remember when I told my mom and dad we were homeschooling, they were like, okay, well, you're going to sell your car and buy a wagon and grow a half a beard and wear a black hat. And, you know, that's, I'm thankful in some ways for that culture because it helped us make the decision. You know what? There are values, there's principles in life that are worth living by. And when we do it the right way, consistently, and you say, well, what's the right way? Well, consistently seeing success through relational intelligence, then we're going to understand what we're created for.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 5'10" and bald headed and overweight. So right there, that means that I can't run a 4.44 40.
Yes.
It's not going to happen.
Yes. mm-hmm.
But you know, I can do a lot of things that somebody who run a 4.40 can't do. Mm-hmm. I just need to find out what they are.
Yeah.
so do our children.
Yeah.
Don't please don't let my wife get down this path, because she'll talk for the next
30
minutes.
I know. I'm holding back. I feel like we can have you on 3 more times, maybe 4.
This is the Rudy argument. You have all these gifts and all these skills, but yet you want to go play for Notre Dame and you weigh 170 pounds. If you pull
my point is with the movie Rudy, it was this guy who, you know, he wanted to play football, but it wasn't his gift. Mm-hmm. But can you imagine if he put all that effort into something he was gifted in?
Sure.
What he could have accomplished. And I think as a parent, we see the gifts in our children, mm-hmm. and maybe one of them wants to do what the sister is doing, but they're not as good. And how do you handle that? You know, do you try to put them at the same level, or do you say, wow, look at your sister. Isn't that amazing? God gave her this amazing gift.
Yeah.
And if we look at it differently, then everyone's trying to compete with each other and be the same. Mm-hmm. It's not going to go very well.
No, it's not. And, you know, and I tell you what, we had our own level of dysfunction. I really want people mm-hmm. to hear this, that, you know, I didn't start figuring, I'm 63 mm-hmm. and I don't think I really started getting somewhat a grasp on life till I was in my late 40s and early 50s. And,
join the club.
Yeah.
And, it's a big club right there.
And just for example, to your point, Julia, is that we have two daughters. Our oldest daughter is here again, and she's the one that she's reserved, but she's also very academic. I mean, we have pictures of her when she was, I think she was probably about 7, and she's wearing the doctor's coat, and she's got this plastic stethoscope around her, mm-hmm. her neck and the glasses on. And, you know, and we just kind of knew that she was going to be in the medical world.
Yeah.
So we kind of just listened to her, and we saw some of her passions were. I coached her for 7 years in girls fast pitch. And the reason why I did most of that coaching is because I felt like that was about the only way she's going to get to play. Yeah. She loved playing softball, but she wasn't good at it.
Yes.
And she'll tell you right now that she wasn't good at it. She loved it. Mm-hmm. But it was learning. And, you know, at the age of 37, she was just appointed the regional dean of the School of Nursing. Texas Tech School of Nursing here in Dallas. Mm-hmm. Now, does that mean that all kids are going to turn out like that? No, but what I am saying is that they had the freedom because we let them grow in their giftedness. Mm-hmm. And our youngest daughter, she starts singing. And I mean, if I had a nickel for every time I just tell Aaron, stop singing.
Yes.
Aaron, stop singing. Aaron, you got to go to bed. Aaron, you're sitting at the dinner table. You can't sing. Well, neither one of us can sing. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't even want to hear me sing in the shower. But I'm telling you something, that girl, when she was able to develop that gift, she went to school on a scholarship, a singing scholarship, and she led the whole campus praise band.
Wow.
At Liberty when she was there.
Wow.
And now she is, she's been leading worship in a local church.
Oh, beautiful.
She's 33 years old and about to have her first child.
Yay.
So you just look at all that and you go, well, that's you doing, you know, good on you. Started with a secure foundation of a secure attachment. We fearlessly let them explore their world. Over time, they become more resilient. Mm-hmm. They learn to make wise decisions in the process. And because they did and we grew with them, they determine what their future focal service was. And it may sound simple, but sometimes we think things are not obtainable because we think they're too simple.
It's simple, but it's not easy.
That's
exactly right.
I feel like sometimes we do, even as a parent, we overthink every issue, every little thing. And I love the simplicity of life, if you let it be.
Dr. Wilson, how can the listeners get a hold of you?
You can reach us at the relationallyintelligentchild.com. That is our website, obviously, that goes with this book. My wife and I are the co-founders of a ministry called Strong Marriages, and you can reach us at strongmarriages.com. And Dr. Trent, who we didn't give a lot of airtime, but he should have been on here with us if he wanted that much airtime, huh?
He made the decision, right?
yeah, that's right. Well, he's such a dear man. Oh, he's such a... You know, everybody ought to have the opportunity to write a book with a best-selling author. And he is so incredibly humble. And I'm not saying this because I'm having to dig my way out of a ditch. But but the truth of the matter is, I mean, he started a ministry called Strong Families. And he's been if you've ever heard of the book, The Blessing, or the Two Sides of Love. I mean, The Blessing was that was a book that he wrote based on his dissertation of secure attachment. Mm-hmm. And that has been a best-selling book many times over. Mm. And So, you know, you can reach him at strongfamilies.com, okay. strongmarriages.com for us, strongfamilies.com for him, and the relationallyintelligentchild.com. And I would say to your listeners, we're just in the infant stages of building out this podcast and some blogs on, we've got a few of the podcast on there. But we plan on being consistent in releasing those as well. But it has been such a joy, really, to have these conversations with you. I'd be willing, love to come back and talk to you at any time you guys Absolutely. Are willing to have us.
Yeah, I just want to thank you because I know the time and the energy and that's put into this, but you're making a huge difference. You and Dr. Trent are making a huge difference on families because we need this. We need this. And I just want to really thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
Quick recap.
Sure.
You sure?
My husband gives good recaps. That's why he.
What's the.
You do. He's very thorough.
Not very thorough. I want to paint a picture.
Yeah.
Dr. Wilson in a home, in a multi-million dollar home, worrying about the foundation, then the aesthetics. And then one day he's saying to himself, I don't know if this is what I want to do. I don't know if this is my personal legend. I'm looking around and thinking, what's the next step? And at 51 or 52 years old, he decides to go to college. Go to college at 51. Most of us
You're
are like
me ideas
thinking
now.
About retirement. I don't want that wrap up to be that good. Let's not get any ideas yet. So he goes to college in 10 years, takes him a decade to get his PhD. And, you know, under the tutelage and under the mentorship of Dr. Trent, I would say really changed his life and really focusing on what his personal legend is, really writing The Relationally Intelligent Child, looking back on his past as if he's Santiago the Shepherd and the Alchemist in that book, saying that was just what my personal journey was. And let me pull back certain stories of what happened in my life. And wow, I landed on a lot of the stuff that I'm talking about right now. And it's important. And to everybody, seriously, secure attachment, fearless exploration, unwavering resilience, wise decision making, future focus, serving of others. If we can hit on that and we can teach our children that, boy, we're going to have an amazing life with our kids. So I want to thank you for being on and all the best to you.
That's great, Gino. I think I want to go out and buy the book now.
That's the idea. I'm trying to sell, but I'm going to be honest with you. We've done a lot of podcasts and what I love about all of these, there's just, you could take little golden nuggets. If you could take one or two golden nuggets from every book, I don't want to continue this, but I love the idea of unwavering resilience. You made me understand that it's our fault that our children are entitled and they don't have the grit. That's the only thing that this separates me from somebody else. I am not that smart, but I will not quit. I will run through that wall and my partner will do the same thing. And my wife will do the same thing. That's a differentiator in being successful in life. If we can teach our children that you said something about millennials, they want it now. And I get it now, but you can't have it now. Like you said, you're in your 60s. I'm in my 50s. I'm living the best version of myself now. It took a little bit of time to get there. And I think that's what we need to teach our children, to have a little bit of patience. I can go into the 100-year real estate investor and talk about entrepreneurship. I won't bore my wife because this was supposed to be a recap. But once you get me going with this stuff, it's important because that's what life's all about. It's all about the long term, about that long term mindset and really setting up an amazing life. And it's not going to happen all at once. You're going to grow into it. So we just want to thank you for being on and all the best to you guys. And good luck with the book.
Yes,
get the book, everybody.
Get the book.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
You bet.